This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. We're approaching 1 year since the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol and American democracy. 1 year later, this country is still wrestling with the legacy of that riot and what it means for the nation moving forward. New polls suggest that, like everything else, Democrats and Republicans are split on what happened that day and even now the result of the 2020 presidential election. Joining us are a pair of political scientists to help us sort out the meaning of the January 6th insurrection almost 1 year later. They are Darius Watson is a professor of political science and a dean at Lincoln University in Jefferson City. Professor Watson, nice to have you again, Darius. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Always glad to be here.
Bob Beatty is a political scientist at Washburn University over in Topeka. Bob, good to have you too.
Nice to be with you, Steve.
Well, Darius, as you look back on the events of January 6th, what goes through your mind? I mean, what's the legacy of that event as far as you're concerned?
Well, the legacy in my mind is that it really, in many ways, symbolizes the relatively unprecedented level of polarization that's developed within our political systems. Obviously, the day's events itself were critical in understanding the broadening divisions between the right and left in this country and what they understand the political process to mean, its value, and ultimately their role in it. But in my mind, we also really need to kind of step back and take account of everything that's happened since that day. The degree to which, obviously, the divisions between the parties have only gotten more critical. And I'm sorry. Oh, I thought you were saying.
No. Go ahead.
And so it just strikes me that as much as there are clear divisions between the two parties that this is not in any way helping repair, I think it's also valuable to point out that the January 6th episode really has created some significant divisions within the parties as well. And I think it would be we'd be remiss to not really look at it. It's not an either or proposition here. There are distinct approaches to understanding both January 6th and its legacy that have caused significant differences within the parties as well. And I think that's only added to the inability to really get our hands on this and make sure that it's not going to happen again.
Well, Bob Beatty, what Darius is saying is that there are lots of splits between the parties, more splits inside the parties as a result of this attack a year ago tomorrow. What do you think? What's the legacy of this whole thing?
Well, Steve, I started my career in political science, actually, studying comparative politics, which is politics of other governments and other nations. And I particularly focused on communist and post-communist societies. And one of the things that January 6th tells us is how fragile democracy is, and that we build up institutions, but institutions can be manipulated. And also that democracy takes a commitment in a political culture. And I think we'd gotten sort of, lazy. We just thought in the United States that we'd built up this political culture, and it was unthinkable that anybody would want to stray from it. And you think about what you saw on January 6th, which is, yeah, people storming the U.S. Capitol, obviously, but what was it they were trying to do? They were trying to stop, essentially, the counting of an electoral vote, and they were trying to stop the peaceful transition of power from one party, yes, to another, but more importantly, from one person to a new president. And so I think that's one of the most important legacies, is that the United States did stop that from happening, essentially a coup. But as we talk a little bit in the next few minutes, there's some who thought, why did this fail and how could we make it work again in 2024 or going down the road? And that's a pretty scary thing.
You know, Darius, so what I remember, and this is more of a personal thing, but was the emotion I felt that day, this wave of sadness that washed over me that afternoon as I watched those events on television. And that took me, you know, by surprise at the moment, maybe in hindsight, not so much. But how about you?
I'll be honest. it was surrealistic for me.
Yeah.
There was a part of me, I remember distinctly watching the events unfold and at for moments feeling like I was watching a movie rather than real events. Obviously part of that was driven by just not believing, you know, as he said, that our political culture would engage in that sort of behavior in the contemporary, you know, context. But it was some of the individual acts that you saw, some of the behaviors, some of the signs, it was just, I don't know. I saw it as a great paradox in the sense of the individuals that were committing the crimes were doing so because they believed that ultimately they were saving the very government that they were attacking.
Yeah.
And the incongruence between what they thought they were doing and why they were doing it versus what they actually were accomplishing, I see that incongruence now in the post-event discussions as well. There's a continuing disconnect to the point that even individuals that were there have been on record as saying, no, I didn't do that, even though you see it on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they themselves can't believe that it happened. And it's that incongruent. I mean, the idea that the Law and Order Party was responsible for the death of a Capitol Police officer during the riot. These are the sorts of things that I think both the Republican Party and Americans in general have had a hard time coming to grips with, this incongruence or paradox, if you will. I guess some would call it hypocrisy.
You know, Bob, you know, Darius makes such an interesting point there as he talks about these splits in our democracy. One big split is that both sides believe today, if you read the polls and listen to responses to questions being asked in the wake of the anniversary of the January 6th attack, both sides believe that they were out to save democracy that day. That's one of the big divides facing the country moving forward.
Well, that's true. And Darius made an interesting point when he talked about, and you too, about the political parties. Probably one thing that has rocked, at least some of the political scientists that I know, is this whole idea of a political party. We always sort of understood, I mean, we talk about the Republican Party respecting law and order. We thought we understood, you know, the values of political parties and why people would want to join them or be a part of them. And his point is excellent. Here were people following the Republican Party and the leader at the time of the Republican Party, just completely destroying law and order. And I guess if we think it through, their goal was then to reinstitute law and order. It's hard to say. But I guess the point is, going back to what I said originally, is that it's really still not yet the Republican Party. I don't know what the Republican Party is, but it was really about Donald Trump. And it was really about what he was encouraging across the United States. Before this program, I was thinking about the topic, and I vividly recall one of the presidential debates he had with Joe Biden, in which he was asked about the Proud Boys, and he made this odd, you may recall, comment right. about, well, you know, stand by. And, you know, that should have... That was essentially a clarion call for what ended up happening on January 6th from the then president of the United States to be ready to do something. And so we talk about the people that went there. Many of them thought they were doing what Donald Trump wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really something that carries with me through the past year.
Darius, you've been talking about these divides in our democracy right now. A new poll out this week from the Associated Press found that a year after the deadly riots at the Capitol, only about 4 in 10 Republicans regard the attack as very violent or extremely violent, meaning 6 of 10, a majority, believe the attacks weren't all that rough at all. What do you make of that?
Well, to take up a point that Bob made earlier that I think is really important here. He mentioned that one of the things that seems to be driving this is an increased, I believe the word he used was laziness within Americans,
yes.
especially as they're engaging political culture. For my 2 cents, the laziness comes from a fundamental shift in the foundations of at least the political foundations of the Republican Party. And I think to a degree it's affected the Democrats as well. And the transition in my mind, and this is just my own thought process, so I'd be interested to hear what Bob and you have to say about this, but it seems to me that the fundamental shift in the Republican Party in particular has been a shift away from Republican philosophy to Republican ideology. And what I mean
what does
by that
mean, Darius? Yeah.
I think it means a much greater emphasis of ideals and principles over the concepts of rational and critical thinking. You are, as a member of the group, you are expected to unequivocally accept the arguments, ideals, and principles that are being given to you as the foundation of the party. And then by definition, all understandings of loyalty are determined by how well you promote those principles. Huh. There is no room for critical thinking precisely because you're then, for instance, forced to step back and ask, was January 6th violent or extremely violent? And to engage that, even that basic question is the unraveling of the thread, so to speak. And so now you have to begin to ask other questions all the way up to and including, well, what role did Trump play? Have I made a mistake putting myself in the Trump camp? And in order to avoid all of those increasingly troubling questions for many Trump supporters, the result is I'm just going to go with a pure ideological, this is what I believe, this is how I think it should be promoted. And anyone that goes against this by definition is a threat to the very thing I think I represent. And when you combine that with a very clear understanding within the Republican Party of what they believe American to be, and by American, I mean identity, I think it's really helped create even greater divide, because to even begin to reach across the aisle is seen by your own party as a betrayal. And I think we've seen that in both the House and the Senate, where the few Republicans willing to question what happened have been called to the carpet by their own group.
Bob, do you buy that analysis of the GOP?
Well, yes. I mean, that was just brilliantly put. And I'm sitting here thinking about it and saying, wow, I really need to think about that more, because I do buy it. I think it's a very, very valid point. And there's a bigger point to that, because the point of, we've seen it, and we know Democrats get accused on some issues of like abortion. Oh, if you go outside, you're going to be ostracized. But when you think about Republicans in the last year, and if they do question Donald Trump, it's not just that they get criticized. But what Donald Trump brought in when he first started running in 2016, which again reminds me of some of my comparative analysis of other countries, is outright bullying.
Yeah,
it's death threats. It's in some cases violent, and so Republican politicians, and Steve, I think you and I know some personally, are sitting there making this calculation. No, I don't agree with Donald Trump, or no, I don't agree with that. But is it worth having my family harassed?
Yeah,
is it
right.
worth going through this? And we see it in their public announcements where they're walking this tightrope, where we almost sense some Republicans. Do not agree, and yet they'll make a pronouncement. Yes, I'm happy to get the Donald Trump support or something. So that's I think a little bit different, but it does remind me of those. You know, I wasn't alive, but those days in the 1950s or 40s and 50s, when democracy was under attack, for example, in the South, because some of the rules that were against black people who were not allowed to vote. So that's similar in the sense that. It can be life and death. That people, if January 6th showed that people will literally, you know, kill in the moment over this, and that's, you know, that's why I agree with Darius.
We're talking about the legacy of the January 6th attacks at the U.S. Capitol 1 year later, what it all means. Dale from Kansas City, Kansas, good morning.
Good morning. I think this issue of both sides thinking that they're supporting the American democracy will continue as long as the one side believes the big lie about the election continues.
Mm-hmm.
And what concerns me is that the media, certain sections of the media, are putting out what I perceive is false information as the truth. And therefore, their people are simply, they're not listening necessarily to NPR or other stations, and they're getting a skewed view, and that skewed view is heightening their fear.
Right, right.
I'll just leave it there.
Darius, what do you think about what Dale's saying, this idea that as long as the big lie continues, we're going to have these problems with our country moving forward?
Well, I I would argue, I guess, that the big lie is just a continuation of a variety of different mechanisms that the Trump camp in particular has used to try and disrupt American politics. I mean, let's not forget that all the way back to the 2016 election, I mean, he said very clearly, I hope I win, I think I'm going to win, but if I don't, then everything's rigged. And so the foundations, in my mind, the foundations of January 6th were set years earlier. And it was a continuation and ultimately an inflammation of an approach that he had taken as the leader from the moment he decided to run. One of the things that I would suggest is, I think there were people within the Republican Party that were frankly shocked by what happened on January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting dynamics in my mind is, as horrendous as the events were, as quickly as they flared up, not only did they dissipate rather quickly, but there was no follow-up the next day. I think there was a real, oh my God, what happened moment in the Republican camp. And one of the interesting things of the January 6th commission is the degree to which many of those texts that they're releasing clearly show that there were major concerns across both the media and the Republican Party as to what was going on and what it meant for the future of the messaging. And so to bring this back to my argument about ideology versus philosophy, I think that's why Trump continues to hold the sway he does, is because as long as the Republicans are utilizing ideologies, it's easy for them to continue to hold him up as a bastion, as an icon. Mm-hmm. There's no critical thinking. And so as much as I'm not convinced that we're going to have a repeat of January 6th, I do believe we'll continue to have the divisions that, frankly, caused it and resulted from it.
Well, I want to play a clip here from CNN. Did an interesting story this week talking to Donald Trump supporters 1 year after the Capitol attack, just to give our listeners a sense of what some of the thinking is among some Republicans across the country. Let's listen.
January 6th attack was not the Republicans nor Trump. It was the Democrats were behind it all. They're the ones that caused it all.
Do you really believe that?
I know it. And there is no way that a Republican would act that way. And there is no way that Trump had anything to do with what happened on January 6th.
But what about all the Trump supporters that have been charged and indicted?
Because it's all Democratic judges and people that were on the take from the Democrats.
It's been a year since the attack on the U.S. Capitol.
This is our Capitol!
And because of disinformation, denial, and diversion, Americans don't have a shared history, a shared understanding of what happened here on that day.
I think the whole reporting of it is a giant hoax.
We are very peaceful people. So it was a total setup. To me, it was the FBI had set it up. I don't believe that they were Trump supporters that did that.
You said the whole thing's a setup. You don't really believe that, do you?
I do. Because Trump won the election. They've proven it over and over again.
When I spoke to Trump supporters here in Washington on January 6th, most were in denial about the results of the 2020 election.
Do you accept that Biden won the election?
Absolutely not. Biden did not win this election.
On January 6th, we walked with Trump supporters who marched from the White House, where Trump was doing his speech, here to the U.S. Capitol. And as we arrived here, that is when the first security barrier was breached. At the time, some Trump supporters told me they were happy with what happened here at the Capitol.
Are you proud of what happened here today?
Absolutely. I think we should have gone on in and yanked our senators out by the hair of the head and drug them out and said, no more.
You know, Bob, a new NPR poll out this week found that a third of Trump voters say the attacks on the Capitol were actually carried out by opponents of Donald Trump, including Antifa and government agents. What I'm wondering is it possible to change any minds here at this late date?
It does not seem so. You know, we got a couple things going on in order. Well, three things. And Darius is right that Donald Trump decided to approach his presidency with the intent of that he could not ever lose, that any election in which he lost was effectively rigged. And what is fascinating is even though he won in 2016, he really set the stage for 2020, because even though he won, he still said the election was rigged in states in which he lost. So, again, you think back to some other countries where they released results and saying, oh, this president won with 88% of the vote. It was that mentality. The big thing is, of course, the rise of the Internet, the use of the Internet is able to put people in communication outside of the normal previous streams. And therefore, one of those interviews, the lady said, they have proven that Donald Trump won. Who's they?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not, you know, the judges, the courts, you know, the Supreme Court, whoever. So they're outside of the institutions. And that's what Donald Trump did when he came into office, which was to tear down institutions and make him or they or alternative news sites that he supports as the only legitimate source of information. And to a segment of the American population, he's been very, very effective at doing that.
The legacy of the January 6 attacks 1 year later is our topic. Our number, 816-235-2888. Paul from Kansas City, Missouri. Paul, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, Steve. Thanks.
Good morning.
For taking my call. My comment, and your guests might find this a little reductive, is essentially that whether you are a, if you are in an argument and you cannot win using facts or using reason or logic, if the argument is important enough to you, you will resort to violence. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing on the right-wing political structure these days. As I recall, there was not even a Republican platform in 2020. These things don't matter on the Republican side these days.
Paul, I appreciate those comments. Darius Watson, what do you make of what Paul's having to say here?
I think it's exactly in line with that differentiation between philosophy and ideology.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, the truth doesn't matter if it conflicts with what I see as the ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the one thing I would kind of disagree with is I don't think the resort to violence is purely some metric of how involved or how dedicated am I to the point I'm trying to make. I think in many ways, the resort to violence, whether it's January 6th or in other instances, really comes from an inability to fundamentally refute the facts that the other side is giving you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're so emotionally invested in the outcome of the disagreement or the discussion that you feel like you're left no choice but to fight, because the only other option is to agree you've been wrong the whole time.
Huh. You know, all this, Bob, leads to what this says about the future of American democracy. Again, referring to this NPR poll said that 64% of Americans believe that the U.S. democracy is in crisis and at risk of failing. I'm wondering what your own latest thoughts are about the future of the country, Bob, in the wake of the January 6 attacks a year ago.
Well, I'm worried. I've been worried since I saw many, many people support a leader whose goal was to break down institutions. In some cases, that's good. It can expose corruption. But in other cases, these are institutions that I think are very important and valuable. And that's what we're seeing continue, which is in some states, the legislatures changing electoral laws and so that they could, if they wanted to, in an election, overrule, regional or local election boards. And we're seeing that happen. I don't think so. We are seeing a sort of a mishmash of attempts to possibly set the stage in 2024, at least to have some states overturn a popular vote, in the Electoral College. We'll be keeping our eye on that. But, it's interesting to see that, Joe Biden won the popular vote by millions. And so successful non-democracies manipulate rules. They manipulate systems. And there are some people who have figured that out and are trying to figure out how to do that in the United States to be in an anti-democratic way.
So, Darius, just in the minute we have left here, maybe a final point. The thing that always puzzles me and concerns me is, how do we pull it back? How do we go from where we are today to a place where the country, the future of the country, is no longer in question?
Well, I think the future will always be in question to a degree. I think that fundamentally one of the key issues here is that there is no clear, we're not fighting for and against some clearly established American identity. I think the reason why, whether it's Trump's populism or the level of violence or a variety of other political developments over the last decade or so, I think it's really testimony to the fact that we don't share a common identity. We don't, I mean, one of the things that I've really come to note is just how different America is by region. I grew up in the Northeast in New York and Massachusetts area. Now I'm living in Missouri, and I can tell you it's fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. Both these areas are different from Nebraska. And so in my mind, we're going to continue to have these sorts of issues develop as long as we continue to argue over what it truly means to be an American.
Okay, we'll have to leave our conversation there, and what a thoughtful one it was. I really do appreciate both the times of our two guests here today. Darius Watson, you just heard his voice, a professor of political science at Lincoln University in Jefferson City. Bob Beatty also joined us, a political scientist at Washburn University in Topeka. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time. Much appreciated.